Hello, this is Donna, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the weekend edition of the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Please excuse my voice this weekend because the smoke in the air triggered sinus infection, and so now I sound like I've had a cold for 3 months, but we'll power through it. We're going to skip right to sports for our starting headlines because there's quite a bit of information going on about local sports and national sports that I want to go ahead and cover. There was a panel of 8 AP Pro football writers ranking the league's top 5 head coaches and 11 groups of players entering the 2026 season. First place votes were worth 10 points. Second through fifth place votes were worth 5, 3, 2, and 1 point. So Andy Reid was voted number one in his fourth straight season. Big Red is number one again. Andy Reid was voted the NFL's number one coach by the Associated Press in a preseason survey for the fourth straight year. Despite coming off his first losing season in Kansas City, Reid remains the standard for coaches. Reid, who has 3 Super Bowl rings and leads both Kansas City and Philadelphia in all-time wins, received 5 first-place votes and 1 second. He was left off 2 ballots. In second place, Sean McVay of the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams fell short against the Seahawks in the NFC title game in January after going 12-5 and winning 2 playoff games on the road. The 40-year-old McVay has led Los Angeles to 1 Super Bowl title, 2 NFC championships, 4 division titles, 7 double-digit win seasons, and 7 playoff appearances in 9 years. Mike McDonald of the Seattle Seahawks was number 3 in the poll. McDonald led the Seahawks to a Super Bowl victory in just his second season, beating New England 29-13 to capture the franchise's second NFL title. At age 38, he became the 3rd youngest head coach to win the Lombardi, behind McVay and Mike Tomlin. The Seahawks went 10-7 in McDonald's first season in 2024. He previously spent 2 years as a defensive coordinator in Baltimore, and his dark side defense allowed an NFL low 292 points last season. McDonald appeared on 7 ballots. Kyle Shanahan of the San Francisco 49ers got 4th place. Shanahan is the only coach in the top 5 list who hasn't won a Super Bowl. He guided the injury-depleted 49ers to a 12-5 record last season and a Week 18 matchup against Seattle for the number 1 seed. San Francisco beat Philadelphia on the road in the playoffs before losing to Seattle in the divisional round. In 9 seasons, Shanahan has led the 49ers to 5 playoff appearances and 2 Super Bowl appearances, including an overtime loss to Kansas City. And number 5 on the list was Sean Payton of the Denver Broncos. Payton led the Broncos to a 14-3 record and the AFC's number 1 seed last season in his 3rd year in Denver. They fell short against New England in the AFC Championship game after quarterback Bo Nix was injured in the divisional round win against Buffalo. Payton, who won Super Bowl with New Orleans, has taken the Broncos to the playoffs twice in 3 seasons. Now, as far as the top quarterbacks go, Josh Allen doesn't need to win a Super Bowl to be number 1. The Buffalo Bills franchise player was voted the NFL's top quarterback by the Associated Press in this survey. The 2024 AP NFL Most Valuable Player beat out Patrick Mahomes, who earned the top spot in each of the previous seasons. Allen appeared on all 8 ballots and got 1 second place vote, 1 third, and 1 fourth. He followed up his MVP season with another excellent campaign in 2025, but the Bills had their streak of 5 straight AFC titles ended by New England and were knocked out of the playoffs in the division round against Denver, costing coach Sean McDermott his job. Allen threw for 3,668 yards, 25 touchdowns, and had 10 picks for a 102.2 passer rating. He ran for 579 yards and 14 scores, making his 4th Pro Bowl and finishing 3rd in the MVP voting. Allen and the Bills are still seeking their first Super Bowl appearance since 1993, despite 7 straight playoff appearances. Number 2, Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs. Mahomes finished his worst season in the NFC on the sideline after suffering a torn ACL in Week 15. The Chiefs were 6-8 with Mahomes and lost all 3 games without him. Still, the 3-time Super Bowl MVP, a unanimous choice for number 1 in this survey in 23 and 24, commands enough respect to earn 2 first place votes and finish second behind Allen. He had 3,587 yards passing for 22 touchdowns with 11 picks before going down with his first significant injury in the NFL. Mahomes is aiming to be ready for week one as Kansas City tries to rebound from its first losing season under Andy Reid. Number 3, Matthew Stafford of the Los Angeles Rams. Stafford earned first-team All-Pro honors for being for the first time in his 17-year career and beat out Drake May for his first NFL MVP award last season. He got 1 first-place vote, 2 seconds, and appeared on all 8 ballots in this year's survey. The Rams went 14-6, including a pair of playoff victories and a loss to Seattle in the conference championship. Stafford led the NFL with 4,707 yards passing and 46 touchdowns. He threw 8 picks and finished second to May with a 109.2 passer rating. Lamar Jackson of the Baltimore Ravens came in 4th. Jackson, a 3-time All-Pro and 2-time NFL MVP, had his first losing season as a starter, going 6-7, and the Baltimore Ravens missed the playoffs. Jackson threw for 2,549 yards, 21 touchdowns, and 7 picks, posting a 103.8 passer rating. Jackson had a career-low 349 yards rushing and only 2 scores. Jackson got two third-place votes and appeared on 6 of the ballots. And 5th was Joe Burrow of the Cincinnati Bengals. Burrow only played 8 games last season because of a toe injury, leading the Bengals to a 5-3 record. It was the third time he played 10 or fewer games due to injuries. Burrow bounced back the following season to win AP Comeback Player of the Year, and the 3-time Pro Bowl quarterback threw for 1,809 yards, 17 touchdowns, and 5 picks with a passer rating of 100.7. Burrow appeared on 5 of the ballots with 1 third-place vote. In other sports news, lacrosse legend Powell is ready to build LeMoyne the blue-collar way by Brent Axe. Casey Powell has one of the greatest resumes in the history of lacrosse. Powell, the new head men's lacrosse coach at LeMoyne, wore the famed number 22 and was a 4-time All-American at Syracuse University. A decorated professional career earned him membership in the U.S. Lacrosse Hall of Fame, NLL Hall of Fame, and Professional Lacrosse Hall of Fame in 2022. There's no question Powell's legendary status in the sport provides LeMoyne a stronger beacon to the lacrosse world as it tries to rise in the Division I ranks, becoming eligible to make the NCAA tournament for the first time in the upcoming 2027 season. Once Powell expressed interest in the job following Dan Sheehan's retirement, how could LeMoyne not give it serious consideration, despite his lack of head coaching experience at the Division I level? Casey Powell's impact on the sport of lacrosse is undeniable, said LeMoyne AD Phil Brown. As one of the game's most influential figures, he has inspired generations of players while helping grow the sport at every level. Beyond his accomplishments on the field, Casey is a proven mentor whose commitment to develop young people aligns perfectly with our mission at LeMoyne. In news from Syracuse basketball, Bridges takes the reins as Boeheim's Army head coach by Donna DeTota. Thomas Bridges will coach this year's edition of Boeheim's Army. Bridges currently serves as an assistant coach on the Long Island Nets, the Brooklyn Nets G League team. He's been an assistant coach for the Osceola Magic in the G League, was an assistant video coordinator for the Philadelphia 76ers, and was a basketball operations video guy for the Delaware Bluecoats. He and Boeheim's Army general manager Sean Belby worked together last season for the Long Island Nets. Belby is now Syracuse University's video coordinator. Belby will also act as an assistant coach for Boeheim's Army. So will Pete Corasaniti, the lone holdover from Adrian Audrey's staff, who's now an SU Associate Athletic Director of Men's Basketball and Operations. Bridges said he and Belby got close last season with the Nets, and Bridges was the offensive coordinator for the team, and he and Belby worked together during the season. He obviously watched more film than anybody could have, so he had a keen eye for what was going on and really helped guide me to make decisions, Bridges said. From there, we built a lot of trust. My coaching got better, and so did his, and it turned into an opportunity here to do something special. Bridges says he's watched a few games in the basketball tournament over the years whenever his summer schedule allowed. The G League uses a version of TBT's Elam ending, which sets a target score in the fourth quarter and demands strategic planning during that all-important closing quarter. The G League only uses the Elam ending in overtime. TBT has a subtle but important difference for awarding free throws and possession of the ball during the Elam ending, but Bridges said he's already noted and discussed the differences with Belby. Bridges says he's familiar with several players on the Boeheim Army's roster, having coached against them over the years. He gave a quick analysis of Ja'Cory Williams, quote, "he gave us trouble, super high energy guy who plays super hard," unquote. Buddy Boeheim and Cole Swider, who are elite shooters, and Elijah Hughes, a heck of a scorer on and off the ball. The team will practice in New Jersey the day before its first game, then have a shoot around and walk through the day of the game. Also from Syracuse Football News, former Syracuse quarterback and CBA star Chuck Zimmerman has died. He was 90 years old, by Chris Carlson. Former Syracuse quarterback Chuck Zimmerman, who was a high school star at Christian Brothers Academy and led the Orange to two of the first bowl games in program history, died on Wednesday in Jamesville. He was 90 years old. Zimmerman was a starting quarterback for the Orange from 1956 to 58, helping the Syracuse to appearances in the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl. The Orange went 27-1 during his three seasons as starting quarterback. He played on teams coached by Ben Swartzwalder and along Jim Brown on the 1956 team. Syracuse's Cotton Bowl appearance following the 1956 season was just the second bowl game in the school's history. It marked the Orange's first time competing in the Cotton Bowl. Syracuse was ranked as high as number 7 in the country that season. An Orange Bowl to cap off the 58 season, Zimmerman's senior year, marked the third bowl game in the school history and SU's second appearance in the Miami-based bowl game. During the Orange Bowl season, Zimmerman led the Orange in both passing touchdowns, 7, rushing touchdowns, 8, playing as part of a backfield that also included Art Baker and Gerard Swedes. He set a school record for completion percentage that season with 60.5% and appeared on the cover of Sports Illustrated 2 days after Syracuse's 14-6 road win over Penn State. Zimmerman finished his Syracuse career with 14 career passing touchdowns and 1,687 passing yards. He accumulated another 10 rushing touchdowns over his three seasons. Born in Syracuse, Zimmerman was a Central New York native whose athletic exploits began at Christian Brothers Academy, where he was a three-sport standout. Zimmerman won all 24 high school football games he played at CBA, and in his senior year, his team didn't surrender a single point. His CBA teams outscored their opponents by a combined score of 594-44 during his career. In 2021, the Post Standard ranked him as the third best football player in CBA history. After completing college, Zimmerman served in the United States Army as a second lieutenant. He returned to Central New York, worked for Coopers & Lybrand, which later became Price Waterhouse Coopers, and retired there in 1994. He was active in the Syracuse community, serving throughout his life on the boards for St. Joe's Hospital, Loretto Geriatric Center, the Syracuse Boys and Girls Club, and the Varsity Club of Syracuse University. He also served as treasurer of the Rosemont Gifford Zoo during a number of fundraising efforts. He passed of natural causes at the Nottingham Retirement Community. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the business section, the region's first mobile dog treadmill will bring exercise to your door. Emily Kolkis. Runners can be quick to complain about having to use the treadmill. Opting for miles on a machine usually means the weather is too lousy for a run outside. New business owner Lise Peebles is hoping her treadmill is not met with moans and groans, but waggy tails and slobbery tongues. Peebles is the owner of Pause in Motion Mobile, a new Central New York business that will bring a treadmill to your pad for your pooch. Peebles, a dog lover who left her remote job in payroll services in January, calls her business Syracuse's first mobile canine fitness service. She's hoping dog owners are craving an outlet to get their dogs much-needed exercise that is convenient, efficient, and a godsend when outdoor dog walking is doggone miserable. "It's an important service because of the climate we live in," Peebles said.
It's rainy, it's snowy, it's freezing cold. The dogs aren't always going to go outside safely to get the exercise they need. So what this does is provide physical stimulation as well as mental stimulation because they really have to concentrate to keep up with the pace that they want to go. It's mentally tiring and just as important for a dog as physical because it also tires them out. Dog owners can visit the Paws in Motion website at pawsinmotionmobile.com/poundcontact to book a visit from Peebles and her custom van. The first 30-minute session is free and a chance to get your dog comfortable with the equipment and with Peebles. After that, 30-minute sessions are $55 for one and $85 for two dogs. A monthly membership is $190, which includes four sessions. Paws in Motion is using a hollowed-out sprinter van that Peebles outfitted with a custom non-motorized treadmill called a mill. The air-conditioned vehicle has artificial green grass on the floor, hanging rows of harnesses and bins of inviting plush and squeaky toys for its four-legged athletes. Peebles, who owns two rescue dogs of her own, is ready with a fanny pack full of treats to coax the pups onto the treadmill and get them moving. This is a process that's going to take a couple visits for most dogs before they're comfortable and actually want to run on it. But once they understand it's okay what they're doing, then they're like, hey, I like this. This is what I want to do. It's exciting. I'm exercising. I'm moving. It's fun. For safety, the dog wears a harness attached to an overhead frame that can be adjusted for the dog's height. Clear panels on each side keep the dog contained and they can run or walk in either direction. The treadmill is entirely self-propelled by the dog, which means the faster they run or walk, the faster it moves. Peebles can also use a handbrake to hold, slow, or stop the belt as necessary. And there's even an odometer to tell how fast your dog is moving. Her machine can hold a dog up to 330 pounds. She said she had her mill custom made with the handbrake and rubber slats rather than wooden ones for better traction. She said dogs of all shapes, sizes, and ages can benefit from the treadmill. For younger dogs, it can be expending that puppy energy. For older dogs, it's just getting consistent movement. It's great for mobility, especially for senior dogs, to get them moving. With the older dogs, I would spend some time on their joints, kind of rotating them a little bit. Like with humans, you do a little warm-up before they start exerting themselves. We recommend if your dog has a medical condition, getting a veterinary clearance before they take this on because they know your dog best. She washes all the toys and equipment between dogs. And as a canine conditioning fitness coach who's also pet CPR and first aid certified, Peebles wants the dogs to be safe and comfortable to get the exercise they need. They're meeting me for the first time, she said. They have no idea who I am. So I'm introducing them to something brand new that they've never done before. I take time to build that relationship and let them know I'm a safe person and I'm going to listen to them. Good for her. In other business news, under the construction column, city's ambitious plans to make public housing keep growing by Renee Fox. The mammoth effort to replace aging public housing near downtown has expanded by less than 100 homes. If fully built out, the plans now call for transforming about 600 homes in the Pioneer Homes and McKinney Manor area into a mixed-income neighborhood called East Adams with nearly 1,500 homes. Originally, the authority planned to replace housing in the area with roughly 1,400 homes in 11 stages of construction work. Earlier this summer, the Syracuse Housing Authority's development partner began looking at a possible 12th phase in an area between Interstate 81 and Upstate Medical University. The developer says that about 250 units could fit in that area alongside retail and other commercial development. But there's no proposed plans for that space, said Allison Carpenter, vice president with the lead developer McCormick Barron Salazar. That space was proposed as home for an optometry school for Upstate Medical University, but that idea was rejected in 2024 when the public called for the space to reserve for more housing. The larger ambitions come as the Housing Authority is undergoing a leadership change and still needs to come up with the tens of millions of dollars to complete the more than $800 million housing project. More recently, City Hall asked the authority to rethink the number of units planned in the center of the neighborhood. Instead of cramming more units into the center, the idea is to spread a few dozen of them across a few lots outside of Pioneer Homes' current footprint. The project could grow outside the original proposed lines, said Carpenter. The transformation plan is a living and breathing document. It'll keep changing as we respond to market and community demands.
The East Adams Housing Project is part of a larger $1 billion effort to transform one of the nation's oldest public housing communities into a mixed-income neighborhood linking to the removal of the Interstate 81 viaduct. Construction is already underway at Angelo Terrace on the former McKinney Manor site and along Burt Street. Together, those developments will create 257 apartments. Taking a look at the weather forecast, after Saturday's storms, looks like the week is going to clear out a little bit. For Monday, 81 for the high with partly cloudy skies. 83% chance of thunderstorms on Tuesday and Wednesday with partly cloudy and showers for Thursday and Friday. Temperatures ranging in the low 80s to the high 70s or vice versa. Around the region, temperatures reached into the high 80s for most of the state, with the exception of Saranac Lake, with only reached into the high 70s. Around the country, Anchorage checking in the high 50s, low 60s. Denver in the high 90s, and triple digits in Las Vegas, as usual this time of year, as well as Palm Springs. And the low temperatures look like they belonged in San Francisco this past week. Around the world, in the 80s in Acapulco, in London in the 80s as well, cooling into the 70s next week. In Rome in the 90s, warming up into the near 100s, and in Toronto in the 80s. Let's hope that the cooler temperatures also come with a reduction in this wildfire smoke. But let's take a look at what's going to come up this week and the weekend following with things to do around the area. On Monday, Heavy Hitter brings its deathcore metal sound to the song and dance with special guests Chain Gang, Torn Open, and local act When Skies Decide. It's ages 16 and older, admitted with ID. 16 and under need a parent or guardian, and no one under 12 is admitted. This will be at the Song and Dance at 115 East Jefferson Street in Syracuse, 6:30 Monday. Doors open at 6, and the cost is $23. The Story House Ithaca's event, featuring stories about trees, set with an exhibit of sculptures, photos, drawings, and paintings by local artists and student work, is an exhibit that explores humanity's connection to trees and the resilience and sanctuary they offer. It'll be at the CAP Art Space Gallery, 110 North Tioga Street in Ithaca, and it runs from 7 to 8 p.m. on Monday, and it is free. The Hamilton, New York International Film Festival, a 7-day celebration of global cinema, will start on Monday. It features screenings across multiple categories, including feature films, comedy, horror, dramatic, thriller, documentary, Canadian, and student shorts, along with live music and discussions on filmmaking. Continuing through next weekend, tickets and schedule are at thehiff.com/ Hamilton Theater, 7 Lebanon Street in Hamilton, 7 p.m. on Monday. Individual tickets are $10. A festival pass is $40, and some of the screenings are actually free. On Tuesday, there'll be a young artist concert. The Festival of Music presents Corcoran High School violinist Nagi Aitben. I'm not going to try and say your name, honey. And the Setnor School of Music soprano Clark Johnson. They will be providing a music concert for the public at Tucker Missionary Baptist Church at 515 Oakwood Ave in Syracuse, 7 p.m. Tuesday. It is free, accepting donations at the door. Nashville-based singer-songwriter Sarah Gross will bring country, Americana, and folk to Syracuse in support of her July album, The Old Side of Being Young. Known for sharp lyricism and grounded storytelling, Gross has shared stages with Zach Bryan. You must be 18 and older to attend. It's tickets at 443socialclub.com, the 443 Social Club and Lounge, 443 Burnett Street in Syracuse, 7 p.m. on Tuesday. Doors open at 5:30. Tickets start at $33.77. A $15 minimum food and drink purchase is also required. Assemblyman Al Sturpe hosts his 20th annual community blood drive with the American Red Cross, featuring prizes, gift certificates, food, and live music for donors to enjoy. The need for blood is especially acute in the summer months. You can make appointment at tiny.cc/lsturpe20thbd or call 315-452-1115. It'll be at Driver's Village, 5885 East Circle Drive in Cicero from 10 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, and it is free to attend, except for your donation of blood, of course. On Wednesday, the Syracuse Orchestra will give three performances of light classical favorites, popular standards, and patriotic tunes. Highlights include a tribute to Henry Mancini, a George M. Cohan medley, selections from The King and I, and an Armed Forces salute. Wednesday's concert is at Inspiration Hall in Syracuse, Friday's is at Lorenzo State Historic Site in Casanova, and Saturday's is at the Fort Stanwix National Monument in Rome. The Rome concert will be followed by fireworks. Registration recommended for the Syracuse concert. Information at syracuseorchestra.org. 709 James Street in Syracuse, 17 Rippleton Road in Casanova, and at 100 North James Street in Rome. The concert on Wednesday starts at 7:30, also 7:30 on Friday, 8 p.m. on Saturday, and the Rome rain date will be July 26th, and all concerts are free to attend. On Thursday, there'll be CNY Jazz in the city. It'll be at the Valley Plaza and feature One Accord Line Dance and the Bob Cecil Zumba Gals before a two-hour headlining set by the Black Lights. The State Health Department will be on site from 3 to 7, offering residents 20 and older a Visa gift card in exchange for a one-time blood and urine sample to build a blood contaminant database study for PFAs, pesticides, and heavy metals. There's also going to be a healthcare village, food trucks, vendors, and a bouncy house. Details at cnyjazzinthecity.org, 4141 South Salina Street in Syracuse from 6 to 9 on Thursday, and it is free to attend. The basketball tournament returning as Boeheim's Army, led by Buddy Boeheim with fellow Syracuse alumni Elijah Hughes, Jimmy Boeheim, Cole Swider, Eric Devendorf, and Wes Johnson, will take on Seton Hall alumni squad in a game of two of the best of three first-round series. 16 teams compete for a winner-take-all $2 million prize. If Boeheim's Army advances, the On Center could also host the TBT Championship. Tickets and more information at tbthoops.com. It's at the Upstate Medical Arena at the On Center War Memorial, 515 Montgomery Street in Syracuse, 7 p.m. on Thursday. The doors open at 6, and tickets start at $28. This coming weekend, starting on Thursday, is the Oswego Harbor Fest. The festival returns with live music, food, rides, and fireworks at Lake Ontario. With over 30 live acts performing across four downtown and waterfront venues, plus helicopter rides, aquatic performances, a children's park, and a midway carnival, there's something for all ages. Thursday's opening night kicks off at Brightback Park with Dangerous Type at 6:30 p.m. and John Waite at 8:30. Bring your lawn chair because seating is limited. Free shuttle buses will run between all venues. Parking is available at the SUNY Oswego Romney Field House lot. Schedule details at OswegoHarborFest.com. Where? Downtown and the waterfront of Oswego. 5 to 11 Thursday, 10 a.m. to midnight Friday and Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday, and it is free to attend. On Friday, there's a party in the square with this disco funk R&B night featuring House Wind Project from 5:30 to 7:30 and the Black Lights starting at 8. Food trucks will be on hand along with wine slushies, beer, cocktails, and spirits. Proceeds benefit 727 Instrumental, which provides musical instruments to underserved students. 161 West Genesee Street in Syracuse from 5 to 11 on Friday, and it is free to attend. Grammy-nominated singer Joan Osborne, known for her soulful blues-inflected voice, will perform music from Bob Dylan, creating an evening for both devoted Dylan fans and lovers of American roots history. Tickets and full event details are TIXR.com. It's at the Center for Arts of Homer, 72 South Main Street in Homer, 8 p.m. on Friday. General admission is $44.81, but discounts are available for center members, seniors, active military, and veterans. The VIP meet and greet add-on is $132, and that is on Friday. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. More things to do coming up starting next Friday. You can go to the Schoolhouse Open House. Step inside an authentic 1881 one-room schoolhouse and experience history hands-on. at the Rippleton Schoolhouse on the grounds of Lorenzo State Historic Site in Cazenovia. Visitors of all ages can try traditional games, play the organ, learn geography, plant flowers, and more. The schoolhouse is sensory friendly and open to the public. It will be open most Fridays and Saturdays through October 10th. You can follow Lorenzo State Historic Site on Facebook or Instagram for special activities or schedule changes. It's at 17 Rippleton Road in Cazenovia, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Friday, and is free to enter. The Syracuse Ukrainian Festival returns to St. John the Baptist Ukrainian Catholic Church in Tipperary Hill for a weekend celebration of Ukrainian culture, food, and community. Attendees can enjoy traditional dishes, live music, and dancing, and browse vendors selling Ukrainian crafts and souvenirs. The family-friendly festival has most activities held under shaded tents. You can follow on social media for more information. It's at 207 Tompkins Street in Syracuse from 4 to 10 p.m. Friday and noon to 10 p.m. on Saturday, and is free to attend. The Syracuse Arts and Crafts Festival brings together 140 artists and crafters showcasing jewelry, ceramics, photography, metalwork, woodwork, fiber arts, and more. And visitors can browse functional and decorative pieces, enjoy free daily entertainment featuring jazz, Americana, folk, Irish, and other musical genres, and catch a mini organ recital hosted by the Syracuse chapter of the American Guild of Organists. Interactive family activities, food trucks, and collaborations with local downtown businesses round out the experience. It's at 298 East Jefferson Street in Syracuse from 10 to 6 on Friday and 10 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday, and is free to attend. St. Episcopal's Church Rummage Sale will offer gently used clothing, household goods, kitchen items, toys, books, and seasonal decor. St. Paul's is celebrating its bicentennial with events throughout the year, and tours of the church and cookies for sale will be available. 220 East Fayette Street in Syracuse from 10 to 5 Friday and Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday, and is also free to attend. The Finger Lakes Chapter of the Antique and Classic Boat Society and the Skaneateles Area Chamber of Commerce Foundation present their annual boat show featuring around 80 restored runabouts, launches, sailboats, canoes, and race boats from exhibitors across New York State, the East Coast, the Midwest, and Canada. Featured vessels this year include the 1926 Hacker Craft Black Witch with a documented rum-running history, and a rare 1959 Beeline Sapphire. The weekend includes live music, boat judging, a boat parade, youth activities, and a spectator cruise aboard the Judge Ben Wiles. More information at skaneateles.com. Where it's at Cliff Park, 15 West Genesee Street in Skaneateles, Friday the 24th from 3 to dusk, Saturday 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., and also on the 26th. It is free to attend. The spectator cruise tickets are $17 for adults, $7 for children 12 and under, and paid parking is available, 75 cents an hour or $6 for an all-day parking. Free parking and free shuttles are also available. St. Mary and St. Mina Coptic Orthodox Church will host their 10th annual Egyptian Festival, offering authentic food, cultural experiences, and a chance to explore one of Christianity's earliest traditions. Attendees can feast on falafel sandwiches, kafta, and shawarma platters, grape leaves, and lukumades, which are different kinds of grape leaves, stuffed grape leaves, I believe, and other things in desserts, including caramel, mango, and Dubai chocolate. The festival also features trivia, a raffle, cooking classes, and videos about the Virgin Mary's apparitions in Egypt and the 21 Coptic martyrs. Full menu and schedule are available at St. Mary, St. Mina, CopticChurch.org/Egyptian-Festival. 106 Church Street in North Syracuse from 4 to 9 on Friday, 11 to 9 on Saturday, and noon to 7 on Sunday, and it is free to attend. You can watch more than 50 artists transform the sidewalks at downtown Syracuse into an outdoor gallery during the 2026 Stay Fresh Chalk Jam, held as part of this year's Syracuse Arts and Crafts Festival. Each entrant receives a box of Crayola sidewalk chalk, a chalk jam tote bag printed by Print Hub, stickers, and water. Participants of all ages can join in the fun, with artwork judged at 3 p.m. and prizes awarded for both adult and youth categories. Tickets are available at stayfresh.design. It's in the 200 block of Montgomery Street in Syracuse. Runs from 9 to 4 Saturday. The rain date will be 9 to 3 on Sunday. It is free to attend. Please register in advance to be an artist. $12 for kids and under, 17 and under. $20 for adults, 18 and up. An all-ages festival showcasing indigenous art, music, dance, food, and culture is on the quad of the Onondaga Community College this weekend. Visitors can browse native art, handmade crafts and jewelry, sample traditional foods, watch a fashion show, and take in the smoke dance competition and live music. The event brings together indigenous artists, performers, and a wider community for a day of learning, sharing, and celebration. It's at 4585 West Seneca Turnpike in Syracuse, and it goes from noon to 7 on Saturday and is free to attend. My Healthy Minds hosts its third annual Multicultural Community Mental Health and Wellness Fair in Clinton Square. It features health screenings, wellness tips, live music, cultural performances, food trucks, a vendor village with artisans and local health and wellness resources and services, and a keynote address by Assemblywoman Pamela Hunter of the 128th District. This fair coincides with the BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month, observed each July to recognize the mental needs of Black, Indigenous, and people of color. All are welcome to attend. It's at 2 South Clinton Street in Syracuse from noon to 4 on Saturday, and it is free to attend. The Puerto Rican Festival honors Puerto Rican and Latino culture, heritage, and community in the Syracuse area. The event features live music, food trucks, vendors, a domino tournament, kids' activities, and more, making it a full day of cultural celebrations for attendees of all ages. Henniger High School junior Renalis Ramon Colon has been named the Festival Queen and Scholarship recipient. It's at Sharkey's Event Center at 7240 Oswego Street in Liverpool, running from 1 to 9 p.m. on Saturday. Entry fee for adults is $5, 12 and under, get in for free. Nearly 30 farms across Madison County will open for a free self-guided tour experience organized by the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Madison County on Saturday and Sunday next weekend. Visitors can meet farmers, interact with the animals, sample products, and explore operations, including a craft distillery, a Wagyu beef farm, and a mushroom grower, all in one weekend. Pick up a free Open Farm Day passport available at Hamilton and Oneida Price Chopper, Market 32 stores, local Madison County libraries, the Madison County DMV Library, and the CCE Madison County to plan your route and collect stamps for a free prize. For a full list of participating farms, downloadable passport, and more, visit openfarmsday.com. It is at farms throughout Madison County from 10 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday. Some select farms will be open only on Sunday. It is free to attend. Products will be for sale, and some optional activities will have cost. Bring some cash is recommended. The Friends of the Casanova Public Library will host their annual sale offering gently used fiction and nonfiction books for all ages. Children's books will be available in a pop-up tent and multiple genres of fiction and nonfiction in the library's community room. Proceeds directly benefit the public library. The adjacent Carriage Barn Books will also be open during the event. It's at 100 Albany Street in Casanova from 10 to 4 Saturday and Sunday and is free to attend. Eureka Day, a satirical comedy by Jonathan Spector, follows the board of directors of a progressive Berkeley, California private school as they struggle to reach a consensus during a mumps outbreak with hilarious and pointed results. The winner of the 2025 Tony Award for Best Revival, this play skewers groupthink, vaccine hesitancy, and the breakdown of shared truth in contemporary life. It runs through August 2nd, recommended for ages 13 and up. Tickets are at hangartheater.org. The Hangar Theater is at 801 Taganak Boulevard in Ithaca. The preview performance is at 7:30 Saturday. Opening performances at 2:30 on Sunday, and it is $50 to attend. The Syracuse Corvette Club will host its 33rd annual outdoor Corvette showcase among the waterfront at Sylvan Beach, featuring more than 135 registered Corvettes of all generations on display. The non-judged rain or shine event is open to the public with music, door prizes, awards, 50-50 drawings, and vendor booths throughout the day. Since 1994, this event has donated more than $450,000 to local charities. It's on Main Street Park in Sylvan Beach, running from 9 to 3 on the 26th, and free for spectators. Corvette owners who wish to display their vehicle will pay $25 in cash at the gate. The Jubilee Homes of Syracuse is bringing the community together for an outdoor concert series at the Spirit of Jubilee Park, featuring local and regional talent performing R&B, soul, gospel, and more. Pack your lawn chairs and hear Soul Keys and Sean Seals and SMX, plus enjoy food trucks, bouncy houses, activities, and face painting. This family-friendly event is open to the public. It'll be at 161 South Ave in Syracuse from 4 to 7 on the 26th and is free to attend. And finally, heavy metal band Five Finger Death Punch brings its 20th anniversary tour to Syracuse's Empower FCU Amphitheater at Lakeview. The band is known for its hits Wrong Side of Heaven, Jekyll and Hyde, and a cover of Gone Away. The show also features special guests Cody Jinx, an outlaw country artist, and rockers Eva Under Fire. Tickets are at Ticketmaster, 490 Restoration Way in Syracuse, 645 on the 26th, and tickets start at $35 for lawn seats and $40 for standard seating. Well, what if your summer plans don't include going outside, but do include going to the movies or watching TV? Let's cover the television aspects first, and then we'll talk about the movies that are playing on your TV streaming and also in theaters. So, Stuart Fails to Save the Universe is the pick of the week. The latest spinoff from The Big Bang Theory centers on Kevin Sussman's Stuart Bloom, comic book store owner who must restore reality after accidentally triggering a multiverse Armageddon. Other series regulars, all reprising previous roles, are Denise, Barry, and Bert, while multiple other Big Bang stars are expected to appear in guest roles, though perhaps as alternate versions of themselves. Remember, multiverse. It begins streaming on Thursday on HBO Max. The Real Housewives of London is the American debut of the first season of the British spinoff from that reality franchise that originally aired in the UK last year. It'll start Tuesdays, 9 p.m. on Bravo. Pompeii, Out of Time with Tom Hiddleston. Actor Tom Hiddleston explores the ancient Pompeii, uncovering hidden stories of everyday life through a blend of documentary and drama. That'll be playing Wednesday, 9 p.m. on Nat Geo. Also streaming, all 10 episodes of Season 15, the show's second season on Hulu, of King of the Hill. That begins streaming Monday on Hulu. Bill Maher, the Kennedy Center Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Bill Maher received the 27th annual Mark Twain Prize for American Humor at the Kennedy Center in Washington. The gala ceremony celebrates his decades-long career as a political satirist and host of Real Time, and features roasts and tributes from famous friends, including Jay Leno, Woody Harrelson, and Louis C.K. That'll start streaming on Tuesday on Netflix. On home video and on demand, Michael, the dramatization about Michael Jackson set during his early, quote, non-controversial days from 1966 to 1988, is also available, and it is quite good. A young man making a wish that his female friend will love him, but is not prepared for the depths of obsession that his wish and acts, called Obsession. Lee Cronin's The Mummy, so it's the director of the recent Evil Dead Rise, reanimates the often-told cinematic story. Animal Farm, the acclaimed 1945 allegorical dystopian novella from George Orwell, gets an animated treatment from Andy Serkis. Normal, Bob Odenkirk stars as an interim sheriff who discovers a Minnesota town's violent secret in this action flick. I talked about this when it was in theaters. It's actually quite good. Deep water, after passengers survive the crash of a plane in the Pacific Ocean, they have new problems, sharks, in a drama helmed by Renly Harlin, Aaron Eckhart, and Ben Kingsley. And then NCIS, Tony and Ziva, Season 1, Michael Weatherly and Coda DiPablo as Special Agents Anthony and Ziva get their own Paramount NCIS spinoff. So those are the things on your TV set. Now, something else that's started this past week on the TV set is a drama called The Five-Star Weekend. It's been adapted from the Queen of the Beach read Ellen Hildebrand's popular novel about friends who help each other through tragedy. And this column is by Emily Yer. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Jennifer Garner has more than 70 million followers on Instagram, but a couple of times the actress has found herself exchanging surprisingly candid messages with people she never met before in her life. Total strangers that I've just bonded with for whatever reason, Garner told the Washington Post in a video interview. She theorized that because she doesn't know them, she might be actually more eager to tell them things she would only share with close friends. So who wouldn't? The desire for human contact can lead to unexpected places, which is the theme that fuels The Five Star Weekend, a TV series now streaming on Peacock and based on Alan Hildebrand's popular 2023 novel. Garner plays Hollis, a hugely successful cooking influencer who is mired in grief 6 months after her husband dies in an accident and is struggling to figure out how to move forward. So she decides to host the ultimate distraction and invites four pals, one from each phase of her life, to her beachfront mansion in Nantucket, Massachusetts, for a girls' trip. This includes her prickly childhood friend Tatum, played by Chloe Sevigny, her self-confident college friend Drew Ann, played by Regina Hall, and her sweet yet awkward mom friend, played by Brooke, or her mom friend Brooke, played by Darcy Carden. The fifth woman, rounding out the five stars, is someone who Hollis never met but had a deep conversation with online, the kind and mysterious Gigi, played by Gemma Chan, one of her millions of social media followers. Garner can relate to this Instagram friend phenomenon, though in this case Gigi is keeping a big secret and she's not the only one. All the women arrive at Nantucket Estate with baggage, literal and figurative, which drives the carefully plotted twists that unspool over eight episodes. Exploring the complexities of grief and friendship drew Garner to the role, although with stacked cast and juicy material. The thing about the books, they're just incredibly adaptable. The characters are fully drawn. We are able to get a cast like that because all of their stories have a beginning, middle, and end, and are rich, difficult, and complicated. And as much as you think, oh, this is a little bit of an archetype of a character here, this might be what I expect, I guarantee if you watch the show, if you read the book, it's going to surprise you. She was inspired to write Five Star Weekend in 2020 when she heard about a Nantucket woman with terminal cancer who invited her closest friends from each era of her life to spend the weekend. Hildebrand thought this was incredibly poignant and a light bulb went off. Oh my God, that's a novel. After Brunsetter approached to produce the series, she read the novel and became captivated. I know how ferocious her fans are, she said. It's really important for me to give them the treat of staying as close to the book as I possibly could. They went over Jen's house recently and she made us lunch with all this beautiful lunch she whipped up for us. It's a gift that you can give people. Somebody makes you a meal. That's pure love. Creating the meals that appear in the show were an important aspect of nailing the chic and cozy vibe of Nantucket, a character itself in any novel. The cast spent last summer filming on the island, an experience they describe as summer camp, with group dinners and boat trips. Garner attended local church and yoga, as well as lectures at the Whaling Museum, something that even Hildebrand has never done in her decades of living there. We were so lucky, Chan said. The residents were very welcoming to the camera crews and the Hollywood A-listers invading their small town. All the characters have complex inner lives, which heightens the show's risky central endeavor of mixing friend groups during a five-star weekend. But it's also a way for people to learn more about themselves, watching something that the producers hope reflect the viewers. Sometimes you're sort of highlighting a different piece of your nature depending on the friendship you're in, right? What it does makes you very existential. Who am I to this person? Who am I to that person? The cool thing is that we really hope people start doing it, that we inspire a bunch of trips. I will tell you, I did watch it. I almost had to binge it because I didn't want to put it down, but I did stretch it over a couple of days. And it is an interesting reflection on grief and friendship and how we develop over our lives and the type of friends that we have. You may have heard other news from the Hollywood world is that Sam Neill passed this past week. And there's a column here that talks about the legacy he has in movies. He started out in 1979 in a movie called My Brilliant Career. He was then in possession in 1981, the final conflict in 1981, and Dead Calm in 1989. And then the one most people know him for is Jurassic Park movies that started in 1993. He was also in The Piano in 1993 and The Mouth of Madness in 1994. So he has a wide range of the types of movies that he's in, even though the ones we remember him for most were the Jurassic Park movies. And also, Anna Taylor-Joy is bloodied and battling in Apple TV crimes thriller Lucky. She finds herself in a familiar setting this summer in the desert fighting to stay alive. She did it in Furiosa and the upcoming Dune Part 3. And now she's under the blazing California sun for Lucky, a propulsive Apple TV crime thriller that has her trading blows with goons and bloodying her otherworldly face. Listen, I've been to the desert so many times at this point, it's kind of unreal. She says, I don't look like a desert creature, but I'm always there, and I love it, said the actor. People love to see me struggle, and they like to see me survive. And luckily, I enjoy doing it, so it works out. And finally, a review of Christopher Nolan's six-country epic film, The Odyssey, which opened in theaters on Friday. Christopher Nolan has never been afraid to dream a little bigger. It's almost a calling. With every film, he's pushed himself and the medium further, playing with form, storytelling, visuals, and audience expectations to create cinematic spectacles. A student of Hollywood history, the Oscar winner is always looking to fill gaps in cinematic culture and show audiences something they haven't seen before. The Odyssey, he realized, was a massive one. All Nolan films are epics in their own ways. Before The Odyssey, he knew he had to do something fitting of the Homer poem and its foundational place in Western culture, something worthy of the biggest screens and resources it would require. The goal was to make something accessible and realistic, which meant going far-flung locations, using real ships on real seas, and taking audiences into the cave with the Cyclops, inside the Trojan horse, and to the bleak expanse of Hades. And now in theaters, it's also the first feature to be shot entirely on IMAX film. We all know the title. We all know what it means. We know what the promises, and hopefully for the audience coming to see it, they'll feel we made good on the promise, because that's the fun of The Odyssey, Nolan said in a recent interview. It's the ultimate adventure story. This journey would require a deep dive into Greek mythology, Bronze Age scholarship, and many translations, a month-long scouting expedition, and a 91-day shoot spanning 6 months and six countries, during which the cast and crew endured all manner of challenging weather, landscapes, and the treachery of the open seas. The Odyssey was an epic undertaking, the hardest film anyone involved had made. Matt Damon, who stars as Odysseus, said Nolan warned him as much before they started filming. He told me it was going to be hard, which I kind of blew off at first, he said. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be hard. He said, no, it's really going to be hard. And he did not disappoint. It's The Odyssey, Nolan said. This should be a difficult film to make, and it was. Unlike Odysseus' extended journey home, the production was also efficient, and they finished 9 days early of schedule. When Hollywood movies take on an ancient world, they often fall back on familiar tropes, using accents, elevated language, 19th century orchestral scores, and neoclassic touchstones to convey antiquity. Nolan wanted to do something different and found inspiration in the text of the poem, in which he observed earthly sensibility that stood in contrast to the grandeur of the story. You want to question people's assumptions about how things should be portrayed in movies and what those are based on? There's a challenge to that and a risk to it. That may take making some bold choices, including colloquial language, American accents, and blending elements from various stories, including the Iliad, the Aeneid, and Agamemnon, to give the audience more clarity. His Trojan horse, which he's been thinking about since he briefly directed Troy over 20 years ago, does not have wheels. For the score, he challenged composer Ludwig Göransson to use bronze gongs, aulos, and the lyre to create a new kind of soundscape and to come up with a four-note theme where the last would be the pluck of a bow. And paramount to the story of homecoming and coming of age, his characters would need to be relatable.
"This movie has so much scale," said Tom Holland, who plays Odysseus' son, Telemachus. "There are many times where it feels like you're on this kind of action-adventure roller coaster, but he doesn't sacrifice any of the heart and intimacy between our characters." Among the large ensemble cast are many famous names. Anne Hathaway is Odysseus' wife, Penelope. Zendaya is the goddess Athena. Charlize Theron is the nymph Calypso. And Lupita Nyong'o is Helen, her twin sister, and her twin sister. Robert Pattinson, Nolan said, is unleashing his inner Alan Rickman as the villainous suitor Antinous. He's continually saying to Telemachus, "I'm going to be your stepdad. I'll be your daddy," Nolan said. It was such a fascinating, creepy, and amusing basis for villainy. And leading the charge was Damon, an actor Nolan knew he liked working with after Interstellar and Oppenheimer. "You'll need somebody who will take this audience on this journey," Nolan said. And with Matt, he's able to combine that iconic sort of superhero thing with a very, very emotionally accessible and comprehensive person. The film begins with the words, "A time of apparent magic, a promise of what's to come in this mythical world of gods, monsters, superstitions, and natural phenomena. The pursuit of the real led them all over the world." Troy was constructed in Morocco. The cave of the Cyclops was found in the foothills of Greece. Iceland's Black Sands, shot in the midnight sun, are used for Hades. And the island of Favignana, near Sicily, played Ithaca, where much of the cast and crew hiked 45 minutes every day for work to reach the 15th century castle, 1,030 feet above sea level. On the seas, they used the real ship, the Draken, a reconstruction of the 1,000-year-old Viking ship that production modified slightly to look more Mycenaean area. Actors learned how to row. The ship's crew played the extras. But Nolan's love of in-camera effects doesn't mean he rejected other kinds. Tenet, Interstellar, and Inception all won Oscars for visual effects, after all. And the Odyssey, there are things that can't be found in the real world. From the six-headed Scylla to the Cyclops, the design which was inspired by the San Francisco Goya painting Saturn Devouring His Son, Bill Irwin, who brought the robots to life in Interstellar, delivered that performance. "We knew we were going to need every trick in the book, from animatronics to puppetry to computer graphics," Nolan said. "But I also knew I needed a performer. He didn't treat Cyclops just as a monster." So what it adds up to is something that miraculously, for a 3,000-year-old tale, feels fresh. "Chris has created something that's totally new," said Hathaway, "and that is a remarkable achievement." Nolan Productions can always inspire a certain amount of hysteria, but excitement for Odyssey has reached a fever pitch. Initial screenings for the 70mm IMAX showings sold out at under an hour a year in advance. When all showtimes were on sale last month, ticketing sites crashed. High-profile locations like the Lincoln Square in New York and AMC CityWalk in Los Angeles were virtually sold out for weeks. And scalpers on eBay are attempting to sell tickets for more than $500 a seat. But the 70mm IMAX screens account for only 32 theaters out of the thousands in North America, so there's way other ways to see the film. For Nolan, the audience is the North Star. Entertaining is a responsibility he takes seriously. In fact, he said a film isn't really done until it reaches the audience, and they're the ones who finish the piece. "The audience tells you what it is," Nolan said, "and that means for us this is an exciting moment, but a frightening moment because it's real. There's nothing to hide behind. We made this film for a theatrical audience, and it goes out to the world as that, and then we'll see what the world makes of it." I look forward to seeing it. I hope that you do as well. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the weekend edition of the Post Standard. Your reader has been Donna. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being patient with the sound of my voice this week. Hopefully next week it'll be much better. And as always, we welcome your feedback, so please let us know what you like, what you don't like, and what you may want to hear that I haven't covered in the readings. And have a wonderful week.